Welcome to the Global Black Caucus Power to the People podcast. My name is Angela Fobbs, and today I'm here with Ben Cole. Hi, Ben.
Hey, Angela.
Well, a lot of things have happened since our last recording. Oh my God.
It's only been a week because we recorded a week.
It's only been a week. Yes.
And much has happened. We got feelings, so we're going to talk about it. We've been building up for a Massage Noir like podcast to talk about misogyny in the Black community that Black women face. And we're going to get to that, I think, next week. But I think this week, after everything that's happened over the past weekend, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the two lives that we lost and the one life that has been, or no, two lives actually, that have been kind of shaken up by the hands of police and white people in the U.S. So.
Yes, it's pretty awful. This morning, you know, I have been kind of laying off the news a little bit because sometimes it's just, you know, if you want to have a productive day, watching how many Black people have been killed is kind of negative towards that. So, but this morning, for some reason, I decided to check out the news. So I looked at my news feed, and the first thing I saw is that a 13-year-old boy was killed by the Chicago police. And the Chicago police is just a bunch of criminals in uniforms, and they always have been from the very beginning.
Yeah, the Chicago police actually like have a history of racism. If you know anything about the Black Panther Party, they were the police department that worked with the FBI to assassinate Fred Hampton, which was kind of the final nail in the coffin. Yeah. I knew this like a few years ago reading a book about the Panthers, but Fred Hampton was kind of being seen as the successor to Huey Newton in the party. And because Huey Newton was in jail at the time in the late 60s, mid 70s. And Fred Hampton was a young 21-year-old Black guy who was kind of trying to keep the Panthers alive in Chicago and try and create what he was calling a rainbow coalition of different types of people from different areas, even some like white supremacists. Actually, he went to not KKK meetings, but a few white supremacist meetings, and he basically made the argument, hey, we're all being screwed over by the same overlords, you know, like the issue isn't race between us, the issue is these capitalist pigs who want to keep us all down, you know. And he basically made the argument to these white supremacists, like, look, I'm not asking you to like us, but for right now we're in a fight for our lives, you know, the house is burning. You're probably hearing me reference some lines out of the movie Judas and the Black Messiah. It's a really good movie. Go check it out. It's about the actual operation that killed Fred Hampton. But Chicago Police was the police department that worked with the FBI to do that.
My first knowledge of how rotten the Chicago Police were, I'm gonna say, it was in a history class. And we were talking about Prohibition, the Prohibition era. And, nobody said, like, oh, the police are rotten. What they said was that a lot of the police were on the payroll of gangsters, like a large chunk of the. And I thought, okay, that's, I mean, you know, I'm a kid, you know, like, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. And I remember, you know, it's a funny thing that our media, our movies and TV actually, in some ways, present a lot of reality about the police. But I don't think people don't necessarily see it as real. Do you ever remember? Okay, you don't remember because you're too young. But I mean, when I was a kid, like, TV just wasn't the same as what it is now. And they played a lot of old movies, like on Saturday mornings and Saturday on the weekends or late at night or something like this. And I remember watching movies from like the 30s and 40s about gangsters and how the police were always on the take, you know, how the gangsters always, and it was always Chicago. Like, it wasn't like it was like just every city. It was literally Chicago. Yeah. Literally. And so, I posted something on my Facebook today and I added some links, but there are actually studies about the police. And the one study is from 1897 until 2020 or something like that, that they've documented corruption in the Chicago Police Department. So I know it's horrifying, really, that you have. I mean, and if you remember, there was this guy. What was his name? He was the one that was torturing people for the policeman that was. Let me see if I can find it really quick. He was torturing people for like 20 years, and he. What is this? He. What was this man's name? And he tortured. He ran a torture cell that other people. John Burge.
No, I haven't heard the name.
He was a policeman from 1972 to 1999. I'm sorry, 1991. And he actually ran a torture center where he, to coerce confessions, he beat and the officers around him, he beat suspects and burned their flesh with cigarettes or put them against hot radiators or tried to suffocate them. I mean, it was really like very brutal things. And through all, there were all these people that kept saying they were innocent of the crimes that they were charged with. And a lot, they actually had to overturn a lot of convictions from people because of this, like, 20-year torture ring in Chicago. So I don't have any. So when the mayor, I mean, I get it. She's a black woman, and we're all supposed to have trust and faith in her. But the Chicago police is a criminal
It's an
organization.
right. The Chicago Police is an institution that has existed long before this mayor. Oh my goodness, what is her name? It is like right at the tip of my tongue.
Lori Lightfoot,
Yeah,
or
Lori Lightfoot, right. And I like Lori Lightfoot. I mean, she is a black woman, she's queer, she's a powerful voice. But just because, just the same with Obama, just because you have a black person, in the driver's seat now or in the executive position now, doesn't mean that all of the things that exist in the organization that she's now in the driver's seat of go away. As a matter of fact, that is how governments function. Governments function to be these very static things, because governments are there to provide stability. So it makes sense that the governments are static. They're not extremely dynamic. They don't change very easily, right? And there's benefits to that, and there's some disadvantages to that. But like the expectation or this thought that like, oh, we had a black president, so now everything's fine, or oh, Chicago has a black mayor, a black woman mayor, so everything's fine. No, it's not. We still have to deconstruct a lot of stuff, that has been going on for centuries. And Chicago has one of the most brutal histories when it comes to racialized violence in the United States. In 1911, there was the Chicago race riots, which was popped off, or it was sprung up when a 17-year-old boy, a black boy named Eugene Williams, he inadvertently or accidentally swam to the wrong part of the beach, because they had segregated beaches in Chicago on the river there, or not the river, excuse me, but on the lake. And so he accidentally swam to the wrong part of the beach on the lake, and he was brutalized for it, which then sparked these race riots, because black people were like, no, you can like we shouldn't be allowed to do this. And the Chicago Police Department basically just didn't pay attention to the violence. They just let the white citizens of Chicago just beat up on and brutalize the black community for standing up after, this black boy was brutalized for just going to the wrong part of the beach.
I mean,
And so
yeah, it's but Chicago has a, I mean, not to just to drift from like African American issues, but in the labor struggle, I don't know if you've heard about the Haymarket riot. That's a that it happened in 1886. And it was a peaceful rally to support striking workers. And the police just went in and just like killed people, injured people, just to get them from striking. So there's no love. Like the police have always been crooked in Chicago, and they're always doing violence, and it's not going to change unless something actually changes with the police department.
I want to bring up, I was on Twitter, as I normally am. I'm somewhat active on Twitter. This past weekend, there was a kind of Twitter spat between these two commentators. One is named Geraldo Rivera and the other is named Dan Bongino on Fox News, on Sean Hannity's segment on
Oh,
Fox
I
News.
vaguely have heard these names before.
Yeah, and like the thing is, like I really don't understand why, like as a liberal or why as a progressive you would like show up on Sean Hannity's show at this point, because you know that the structure of the show is not to honestly, like it's not, the show is not structured to allow liberals or progressives or anyone who disagrees with the Hannity, you know, the Hannity Fox kind of messaging to honestly talk about their points, you know what I mean? And to have an honest debate about things. What they're looking for is gotcha moments. And once they get the gotcha moment, then they're just going to attack you based on the gotcha moment. And so, you know, like I really don't see the point in why people go on, but Geraldo Rivera wanted to go on to talk about, you know, racialized police violence. And he, I don't know how progressive he is, but he has been kind of an advocate of some types of gun control and gun reform. And he's also been a very big critic of police, and particularly when it comes to police violence against Black men. And the argument, you know, that he was making was that what we saw with Duante Wright in Minneapolis or near Minneapolis was definitely an example of racialized police violence. Even though the cop who killed him says that she had accidentally reached for her gun when she meant to reach for her taser, and so she's being charged with manslaughter now because it's being considered an accidental homicide. Whatever, there's a whole thing about that, but like that Geraldo Rivera was arguing, like even if this was an accident that this happens to, like the fact that she was even wanting to you know brutalize or do violence, you know that the situation escalated is because of racist bias in policing, right? And you know, so they attacked him, like that this other guy, Dan Bongino, was like, where's the data? Where's the data? And you know, you can go watch the clip yourself. I wouldn't say waste brain cells on it. I did it for you, basically.
Yeah, thank you.
Hannity and Dan Bongino are basically like, there's no data, there's no data. You can't support, you know, this claim that there's racialized police violence. And the if
What?
you are
Wait.
someone,
I
right,
gotta
that's what I'm thinking.
stop.
Like,
Like, there's no racialized police violence?
right,
None?
they're saying that race is not a factor, that race is not a factor, you know, blah, blah, blah. Let me just say, go to mappingpoliceviolence.org. You can find out so much stuff about not just police violence, but you can look at their database that talks about like the racialized aspect of police violence as well. Black people are most likely to be killed by police. This is on their homepage. I'm reading you their homepage right now. Black people, 3 times more likely to be killed by police than white people. 1.3 times more likely to be unarmed compared to white people when they are killed by police. Police killed Black people at higher rates than white people in 47 of the 50 largest US cities. You know, where you live matters. So there's differences in there's disparities in where you live. 5 times more likely to be killed by police in Oklahoma than in Georgia. Kind of surprising, but I think that that might make sense actually when you look at racial demographics in Oklahoma versus Georgia. This is well documented that there are disparities in between race and how the police treat Americans. Go to nature.com. Nature.com has an article, June 19th, 2020, what the data say about police brutality and racial bias and which reforms might work. Go to that, read that. You know, like, and nature.com is the kind of the kind of news more or less news outlet for a bigger academic journal institution. But you can even get information from the Department of Justice. You can get information from the Department of Justice. You can get information from the National Institutes of Health. This is so well documented that there are racial biases and there are racial disparities when it comes to police violence. This is not a myth. This is not something that liberals just throw out there. Just this, you know. We can have whatever feelings we want to have. We can have a debate about what we do about that, right? We can have a debate about what we do about that. We can have a debate about where do police biases come from? You know, are they intentional? Are they not intentional? And what we do based off of that. But we can't debate the facts, you know? And conservatives love to say that. You're entitled to your opinion, but you're not entitled to your own facts. Well, Sean Hannity, you're not entitled to your own facts. Here are the facts. You know, I could pull out study after study after study, whether it be from the Department of Justice, whether it be from groups like Mapping Police Violence that are independent auditors of police violence. This is well known. You know, so stop bullying liberals because you to prove, you know, to come up with the facts. The facts are here. Everybody can see them. You know what I mean? Like, we're not just hiding behind slogans because we think it's cool. No, we're talking about real things. So, you know, yeah, understand that these are real things. And I saw this post, you know, the other day too on Instagram that said, you know, if you have a black friend and you don't understand why they're hurting right now, you don't really have a black friend. You just know a black person. And that spoke out so much to me because, you know, the past few days since I heard from since I heard about, you know, Lieutenant what's his name? I think it's Lieutenant Cannon. I don't want to say his name wrong. I just had his name up here.
That's a good question. What is that guy's
Right.
name?
He's Afro-Latina, and so I want to make sure I get his name right.
I feel like it's Gutierrez, but I'm not
I
certain
think
about
that's the
that.
name of the officer who was arrested or who
Ah,
was fired for him.
okay. Well, that's nice.
But this so that happened and okay, so his name is Army Lieutenant Caron Nazario. That's his
Nazario,
name.
okay, yeah.
But the officer who pepper sprayed him, his name is Gutierrez, I think. And yeah, the point that I was trying to make, yeah, again, goes back to like this is real, you know, like this is not imagined. This is not something that we just want to be real so that we can you know, just be right, or so that we can progress some sort of like liberal whatever agenda. Like, we just want to stop dying in the streets. That's all I want. I want to be able to like raise kids and be able to tell them that they can feel safe in their own neighborhoods. That's all I want. You know,
Yes,
that is all I want.
that is a lot, actually, given the
Right,
circumstances. Like,
apparently.
I have to say, I'm constantly worried about my brother and his son and my sister's son. I'm worried about okay, and now she has more than one son, but the other ones were little, you know? But now I'm just like, Jesus Christ, you're just It doesn't even matter if the kid looks little, like that kid that got killed, he looked like a baby. There was no like I have to be afraid of this person, you know, because he was just a sweet little kid. And I mean, okay, sweet, that's he looked sweet anyway. Yeah, I worry about my family members all the time because anything could happen, and I don't know what I would do if there was police violence in my family. But be sure I have enough money to sue a whole bunch of people.
Yeah,
And
that's good.
I'm not afraid.
Right.
Like,
Yeah.
really. It's
Yeah.
horrifying. And that we should have to be afraid all the time for our family members, for ourselves, you know? I mean, if you go to
Yeah.
the States, I don't go to the States very often. I haven't been there since 2019 because I couldn't go there in 2020 because of the
Right.
pandemic.
Yeah, there was, we had a thing.
Yeah, but when you think about driving, you know, you're driving around and then maybe there's some trigger-happy policeman. I fear it for myself when I go there. You know, like I
Yeah.
because here's the thing. It's like sometimes I forget that I should be oppressed, you know, and that I should be sweet and nice. You know, I think of myself as a full citizen of the United States and I have my rights as a citizen. So
Yeah.
that will get me killed.
Yeah. Do you watch Hasan Minhaj on Netflix? He has the show. I can't remember the name of his show.
Yeah, I've watched that show. It's good.
Yeah. He has one episode where he talks about, after 9/11, his father and his family, not just his father, but his family was kind of attacked. They had some people like trying to play pranks on them, and they like busted out the windows of the family car. And his father like went outside and cleaned up the glass and was just like trying to tell the family like, hey, stay calm. We have to be calm, and we have to, like when we interact with people, don't tell them that you're Muslim. Just be nice and be friendly. And Hassan, he says in this one episode, he's like, yeah, like I wanted to go after the people. I was like, we heard them break the glass. They're just around the corner. I want to go after them. And his dad was like, no, Hassan, like we have to just stay here. We have to just clean up the driveway. We'll be okay. We're not hurt. And he said something that was like really profound to me. He said that his dad, he noticed in that moment that, his dad has these experiences coming to the United States and immigrating to the United States and internalizing these things, because for his dad, this is the cost of the freedom, of living in the United States. This is the cost that he is going to experience these things. But he said for him, who was born there, grew up there, he has the audacity of equality,
Yes.
the audacity to believe that he should be equal in the society, because that's what the society promises. And like I feel the same thing when I look at how, even with my great grandfather, I was lucky enough to be able to spend a lot of time with my great great grandfather before he passed away. I kind of grew up with my great grandparents, not my great great, excuse me, my great grandparents, my great grandfather, my papa. And I remember after he got sick, I would have to take him to the store every now and then. Like I would drive him whenever I came home to visit, because he liked just going around town and, doing little odd stuff. And whenever I remember one time taking him to Walmart to get some medication, and being on an aisle that had a white man like standing on the aisle and standing right in front of the medicine that we needed. And I was like, okay, Papa, just let me know. He's in one of these like little like electric scooter things. And I said, okay, Papa, just let me know what medicine specifically it is, what brand you want, so I can go over there and get it. He was like, oh no, don't worry about it. We can just wait, or we can walk around. I said, no, it's right here. Like, I'm gonna just ask the guy to move. Like, it's right here. He's like, no, we don't want to cause any trouble or anything. And I was like, Papa, it's no trouble. Like, I'm just gonna go ask the guy to move. And in my mind, it took me a little while to realize, like, my papa grew up in a world where you couldn't ask white people to move for you.
Yeah.
You couldn't.
Yes.
You had to just kind of wait and hope that they would be gracious enough to move, or just wait until they weren't there anymore. To have the audacity to go up to a white person and ask them to move. And I feel like that's what we're seeing now, is we're seeing a movement of social justice where Black people have the audacity of equality in our country. And we should have for a long time. And I think every generation we get a little bit more and get a little bit more. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing us get a little bit more and saying, you know what, we have the audacity to believe that we should not be brutalized by the police, that the police should not be judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to dealing with Black people. So I want to take some time to kind of like go over and go through like all of these events that we saw, and just kind of talk about Just talk about like, like we're expressing a lot of things, and but just talk about like what needs to happen, and so the first thing that happened last week was like I said, Army Lieutenant Caron Nazario had just bought a new car, and in Virginia, and he was traveling, I guess home. I don't know if it was directly after buying a new car, but it must not have been because he had temporary plates in the window of the car, but police pulled him over, or police lit him up, like lit up the lights behind him because they didn't see a license plate on his car. And so he drove another mile or so to a well-lit area, which is something I learned to do when I was learning how to drive. I was always taught, don't just, if you're kind of on a country road or something, don't just pull over, anywhere. You need to make sure to pull over somewhere where there's lights, and not just for your own safety, but also for the officers. Like I was always taught, like, police officers don't want to have to get out of a car on a dark lit like country road because they don't know, what's in your car, right? So for the safety of everyone, you just kind of slow down. You may put your flashers on, your blinkers on, the caution lights, and you drive to the nearest, gas station or something where there's lights. So Lieutenant Nazario did that, and he gets to the gas station, and police exit their vehicles with guns drawn, guns trained on him, and start yelling orders at him to get out of the car. And so he puts his hands up out of the window. He's calmly asking, I don't know if you saw the video, you don't have to, I watched it for you, but he's just calmly asking, like, hey, what did I do wrong? Why are your guns trained on me right now? Can you get your commanding officer or your supervising officer out here? Why is this escalating? He said, pretty much all of those things. And they pepper sprayed him for not cooperating with them. I wouldn't get out of my car either. I would not get out of my car if someone was pointing a gun at me, and just barking orders at me.
That was the video where they threatened to kill him.
Right. Yeah.
And
Because
it.
he said, I'm afraid to get out of the car. And one of the officers yelled at him and said, you should be, you're about to ride the lightning. That is a fr that specific, he's the officer said that specific line. That line comes from The Green Mile, if you've ever watched that movie with Tom Hanks, where they execute, like they're working on death row, and they call it riding the lightning when they execute the prisoners. That they say, yeah, you're gonna ride the lightning. So, to have an officer say that to a black man with his gun trained at him, like,
What? Gosh,
what?
that is horrifying. I mean, seriously, you can't just I all this was they were completely wrong.
Right.
Completely wrong.
Oh, and even worse, the icing on the cake, Angela, was the fact that after everything was cleared up, one, they said that he was right for what he did, that they were like, oh yeah, it was right, it was a good decision to drive to a safe area, like everything that you did was basically right. They were still just saying like you should have complied, and he was like, well, I did try to comply, but what happened in after that, and I think that there's also body cam video of this too, is that they basically told him, hey, if you don't make a big deal of this, if you don't report us, whatever, you can go on your way, you can go home right now. If as long if you yeah
Oh,
as long as
that's
you
nice.
right
That's
this
nice.
was at
Criminal conspiracy.
right
Lovely for the
this was after
police.
they had like pepper sprayed him, drug him out of the car, and searched his car. Searched his car without consent, without a warrant. So I'm pretty sure that was an illegal search anyway, and then they're like, yeah, if you don't make a big thing of this, then we'll just let you go right now. You can go home. And so, he went home, but I'm really glad that he also filed a lawsuit.
Yes.
And it's and one officer has been fired, but there should be more consequences for all the officers involved. Then we have, of course, in Minnesota, the shooting of Duante Wright. Like,
Yeah.
the fact that they so if you don't know exactly what happened, Duante Wright was driving around in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, He didn't know that he had a warrant out for his arrest. Apparently, the warrant stemmed from a court appearance, or a not a court appearance, but a fine that he basically didn't pay, or he had trouble paying and was late on. And this has happened to me before too. Like, and I've had a speeding ticket that I didn't pay on time. And what happens normally is like you get an arrest warrant like out, but it's like a low-level warrant. It's like, okay, just bring him in to like pay the fine. And so that's the type of fine that Duante Wright had. He had this type of fine, or this type of warrant that came from like not paying a fine. It wasn't like he had been a criminal, like, you know, a violent criminal was like on the run from police or anything like that. No, he just forgot to pay a fine, or he couldn't pay a fine on time. And so police pulled him over, not because they already knew that he had a warrant, but because he had an air freshener on the mirror of his car and he had outdated tags. That is nothing but a fix-it ticket. You know, like, one, I don't even understand the air freshener on the mirror. That does not obstruct your view. That's what the police were arguing, that, well, it was obstructive. We believed it could be obstructive. How many millions of people have air fresheners hanging
Like
from
everyone,
their
practically. I mean, come
They're
on.
literally designed to hang from there. Like,
Yes. Like,
oh
sue
my
the
God.
company and tell them to stop making them, you know?
But you know, under normal circumstances, that's a fix-it ticket. Now, what they did, I think that they took his license and they ran it, and they found that he hadn't had a warrant for his arrest. What they should have done, or what they sh yeah, what they should have done, is said, "Hey, we noticed you have a warrant for your arrest. We don't know, or we're going to call in and figure out why you have this warrant. Stay calm. We're going to pull you out of the car. We want you to come out of the car. We're going to detain you at this point for the warrant." And at that point, yeah, they could have taken him to the station to figure out what the warrant was for, or whatever, to place him under arrest. But they, of course, it escalated as they're trying to drag him out of the car, because I don't think that they had fully explained what was going on, why they were arresting him before. And the officer, Kimberly Potter, she pulls her gun and she shoots him. And she is yelling taser in the video. She's like, "Oh, I meant to pull my taser." Here's the problem I have with this. You have, apparently in this police department, it's their protocol that you have both a taser and a lethal weapon, a firearm. And the firearm is in your dominant hand. The firearm is on the side of your dominant hand. The taser is on the side of your non-dominant hand. And so the problem is that, like, when you are in a high stake situation, you're in a tense situation, of course you're going to reach for the thing that is in your dominant hand.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's natural. Like, why, I don't understand why the taser was not on the dominant side, you know, and the lethal weapon, the firearm, on the non-dominant side. I don't understand that. I guess the logic is, well, in the worst situation, you want to be able, you don't want to have to like you don't want to have to make a decision. But I do want cops to have to make that decision. I'm not apologetic about that, because like when cops make bad decisions, people die, as we see. And I understand the risk to a cop's life. I totally get that. But at the same time, I don't want it to be the case that cops can just go out, accidentally kill people, and be like, "Oh, sorry, I was trying to do the right thing, but I accidentally did the wrong thing," because you know what, this should not be the case. You know, this really should not be the case. So, and what's worse, I remember, you know, like when I was in my master's, I was working for a police department in the town next to where I did my master's as an internship. And I remember talking to the police chief, and that police chief, he didn't even buy tasers for his department, because
Well,
he
thank
said
goodness.
he no. He said he doesn't want his police officers to have to make the decision if they need to use lethal force or non-lethal force. So he decided to not buy tasers for his department, so that all of his officers only had lethal weapons. There were no tasers in that department. There were no non-lethal weapons in that department. And I remember at that time being just appalled. Like, then you're not giving the people that your officers are going to contact any sort of chance whatsoever. You know, if things escalate, then your officers are going to shoot to kill. You know, and this is not unnormal in policing.
Yeah.
So I it's
I just don't understand why. I mean, this little town, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. It sounds like a small town, like a small city. Why are they expecting so much violence? That's what I don't understand.
I have to I really think that this is about the culture of policing. The culture of policing, and I was thinking about this like over the weekend, and earlier this week. I remember growing up watching Walker, Texas Ranger. I don't know if you ever watched that show with Chuck Norris.
I maybe have seen it once or twice. I don't like cop shows, so yeah.
I don't like modern ones. I remember this one, and my view of the show now is very different than what it was when I was a kid. But I remember watching this with my great grandfather because my great grandfather didn't like watching stuff with a lot of shooting. And so this one he liked because Walker, Texas Ranger, he's this kind of Texas Ranger who is like this very moral, upstanding guy, and he gets the bad guys without a gun. He uses his karate skills to capture the bad guys. And there's a lot of like race coding in it. Like a lot of the bad guys are Latinx or Black or are indigenous, and it's really weird how they kind of it's kind of like a modern cowboys versus Indians type of thing. The this white righteous guy versus the savage Black and brown people. But I did feel always like I did relate always to this kind of like you shouldn't have to use lethal force, right? Like a good cop should be able to find a way around lethal force, or cops shouldn't always resort to using the most lethal methods, right? That's something that always stuck with me from that show. There's actually a reboot of the show going on right now, and I wish that they would use that. It's apparently it's not very good. I've read about it.
Pretty sure it's probably going to
But
be violent, so
yeah, I
yeah.
don't know. I haven't watched it yet, but like but I've never understood why this kind of like feeling for cops is like, oh, like we have to like show an overwhelming show of force. We have to out muscle those bad guys. And when I read this book, The End of Policing by Alex Vitale, or Vitale, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's a really good book. He talks about how kind of the culture in policing has shifted since about the late 1970s, 1980s, to where police see themselves as kind of like overseers and kind of like these domestic warriors versus like against some bad, like these some evil, horrible entities that would devour our communities if it were not for them,
Yes, that is
and
true.
he's right. And he talks about, like a lot of police agencies have actually trained their police officers at using this kind of this method developed from this guy. He's a former military guy who did, or at least he used to work for the military. And he developed some train like this kind of training construct and for police that it's kind of like this sheep versus or this wolf and sheep mentality, and he kind of teaches police like you have to be the wolf, you have to be this like this aggressive this wolf that is willing to fight for the sheep, because if it weren't for you then the sheep would die. Or no, sheepdog mentality, that's what he says. He's like, you have to be this aggressive sheepdog because there are wolves out there who if it weren't for you would devour the sheep that you're supposed to protect, right? And so you have to be this aggressive brutal sheepdog, and you cannot hesitate to use violence because the wolves will use violence whenever they can. And kind of throughout the late 80s and 90s, this particular like style of training just flourished in police and policing in the United States and police departments. And it has become a very big part of the culture of policing now, not just the training and not just the tactics, but it is the culture of policing that police see themselves as these, sheepdogs, and they have to protect the sheep at all costs. And I'm like, I think, it's very clear that what we're trying to say is like, hey, we don't want you to protect us this way. Yes,
That's
you're
right.
here to protect us. But we're not just simple sheep, you know. We're not just simple sheep. We're here to just accept however method you want to protect
Yeah.
these communities.
And criminals are not wolves, you
Right.
know? Like, we're all people. I listened to this podcast called Behind the Police. It's a like a podcast mini series, and it goes into some a great detail. I'll include a link. I'll include all the links that we've talked about in the show notes, because people have to understand how policing, how it originated, how it's evolved, and how it's continuing in order for us to make changes. Have you ever seen this show called Cops?
Yep, I used to watch that all the time with my grandma. And there's a few problems I have with cops,
Well, yeah, it
but
finally went off the
yeah.
air. There were so many complaints about it and so many exposés about the show, and that I didn't realize that it had been on for like 30 years. Like, I remember when it came on a long time ago, and I watched a few episodes and then I stopped because I thought, okay, this is crazy. Why would anyone want this to be on TV? But one of the things I listened to another podcast about Cops, this show, and what they were saying is that a lot of people that watched Cops when it first came on grew up to become police. And they wanted to be on Cops. They wanted to be on the TV show, so they did all sorts of things that they wouldn't do, that they shouldn't do in order to be on this show. And how and it's this the basically one of the things about this series is that it ruined a lot of people's lives, because the people that you see being arrested on Cops, they may or may not have done anything. Like, and mo a lot of times that they didn't do anything, but their faces were
I
broadcast
think
across
that's
the country, you know?
right. I think that's something like kind of coupled with the change in culture about policing is how policing was kind of broadcast as a entertainment thing,
Yes.
for consumption to people through shows like Cops. Because what Cops presents to you is only the first step of the criminal justice process, right?
That's right.
But it kind of presents to you this good versus bad guys. We know the good guys, we know the bad guys, right?
That's
And
right.
so the people that the cops are going after, that's all you need to know. There's no more story to it. It's once they've been arrested, then we know they're a bad guy and they can be hauled off to jail and we can forget about them and throw away the key and forget about them. And that's not true. There's a lot more to our criminal justice system, and cops are not the determinants of who are the good guys and the bad guys. That's not the role that police have here. Police are just here to keep peace, and police are here to respond to emergencies. And when there is a disruption of the peace, or when there is harm being done, then to make arrests so that there can be an investigation so that we can figure out the truth, to figure out who is the good guy and who's the bad guy. And that's not always very clear. Sometimes the bad guys are not actually bad. You know
Yeah.
what I mean? Like
Yes.
that's more true than anything, in my belief.
Well, look at Breonna Taylor. They burst into her home shooting, and they had the wrong house, and they had the wrong person. So, yeah, not
And
always
so,
right.
right. And so I but I remember like watching Cops with my grandma, and Cops also shows like bias. Like there's even research that talks about the racial bias in that show and how they portray predominantly they portray black individuals being arrested, more overwhelmingly portrayed than white individuals. And I remember growing up and watching Cops with my grandma. And I remember one night, I remember this night like very clearly, like it was yesterday, just asking my grandma, like being really scared and being like, "Grandma, how do I keep myself from going to jail? Like, what's jail like?" And she was like, "Well, I've never been to jail, but what do you mean?" And I said, "Grandma, I'm really afraid that I might turn out to be a bad guy and I really don't want to go to jail." And, I was probably like 5 at the time, 5 or 6. And my
Wow.
grandma was like, "Oh, like you're not going to be a bad guy. Like, it's based on your choices. And as long as you don't make bad choices to hurt people, you won't go to jail. But I really thought, because we were watching this show, that it was like, at some point you're just either good or bad, and there you don't have any determination in it. You don't have any sort of like say in it, that you're just at some point you turn out to be bad. And if you grow up watching something like that, that's kind of the construct that you're taught, that at some point people are just bad. And there's no hope for them. They made their choices or whatever, but just their inherent nature is that they're just bad. And I'm really happy that my grandma kind of taught, kind of told me that and really talked to me about that. But being a Black kid and internalizing that, like, that was already internalized for me at about 5 years old. And looking at that now, it's like, why did we allow this? The fact that we, one, commodified and entertainmentized, however you want to call it, but turned, criminal justice into entertainment. Especially the most unclear part of the criminal justice process. When you arrest someone, that is the most unclear part. You don't know necessarily what is going on. That is the most unclear part. And yet we're turning this into entertainment for people to just consume without any further context,
I wonder how many other people have internalized this, of all races, that that some people just are bad and they are, that's the way humans are. And I mean, I think it also, this sort of police entertainment has also fueled gun sales too. The idea of, protecting your family from the good, the good guy with the gun versus the bad guy with the gun. It's pretty shocking, and it's probably, I never really thought about it until the past few years. Like, I stopped watching a lot of stuff like that, like a long time ago. I would I didn't even I'm not even a person who watched Law and Order. Like, I watched a few episodes, which is still on, which is ironic to me, like, that the show's been on for 1,000 years. I watched a few episodes of Law and Order, and I thought, yeah, this is a little bit too sanctimonious for me, like the cops and the DA, and they're all, it's sometimes they do bad things to get a certain result, or and I just never wanted to see something like that. I just think about all these cop shows. Some people in my family like to watch CSI and some other things like that, and I just can't. Like, I don't want to see the police doing anything. My yes, I try. I am not anti-police, but I am anti the way that police are now. I think that, yeah, we do need some kind of security forces. I mean, things do happen where you actually need the police. Like, let's say the Capitol riot, where we actually needed the police to do something, and come to find out they were told not to do
Not
anything.
to,
Yeah, weird.
I mean, and then again, like the last thing is this 13-year-old boy, his name is Adam Toledo, who was killed by Chicago police. And we've already kind of ranted about the history of Chicago police, and I don't know the full story. But I'm not gonna sit here and say that, like, I cannot just accept the fact that police can shoot a 13-year-old boy, and face no repercussions for that. I guess the argument that the police are making was that they thought that the boy had a gun, and I don't know, I don't know, again, the situation as well, because it's just breaking news, as of like yesterday, or I think so. I haven't read up as much about it, but I don't know. I can't.
I watched the video, and normally I don't watch things like that, but I just had to see it. And basically, this kid was with an older person. Like, the person was like 21. I mean, he wasn't, like 1,000 years old or something. He was just a 21-year-old. So the police heard gun were called for gunshots. And in the video, you see the 21-year-old is there So they're in an alley or a side street or something like that. And the police run past the 21-year-old who was just there, like that they could have easily taken into custody, and ran after the kid. They get to a certain point, there's like a break in this wall or fence, and allegedly they say that he threw the gun behind this fence and he turns around with his hands up like this, and then the police shoot him. And they say that he had a gun, but I'm sorry, the Chicago police have planted enough guns, and police in general have planted enough weapons where I feel dubious about that. I don't, you know, you're gonna have to prove it to me that this kid had a gun. You know, like, where's the other proof? Not just that there was a gun off to the side over here. And I mean, because anybody could have dropped a gun. Like, it's a common, we know that police carry weapons to drop as evidence. We know this. That's not something you just see on TV. It comes out all the time. So, I don't know. The kid turned around. His hands were up, and he had nothing in his hands, and the policeman shot him. Usually, I don't watch those type of videos, but I just looked at that little boy's face, and I had to watch it. You know, like I had to see what happened. He didn't. And the thing is the kid was running away from him also. So the idea that the police have to pursue everyone, it's something. Actually, my husband and I were talking about this, how the police are always like high speed chases, running through crowds, trying to catch people. Like, you don't have to do all this. Like, there's a, who what I'd like to know is what rules or procedures have been set up that tell police that you have to do everything, no matter how much you endanger the lives of the person that is the suspect or the bystanders in a crowd of people or on a road to catch a criminal, because it's not that important. I mean, if you think about the difference between, I mean, there's all sorts of videos where you see the police like in doing high speed chases. This is dangerous. It's not necessary. Take their license plate and move on. You know, like you'll get them. You know, you
I
don't
mean,
have to.
there are even times where police have to call off a chase because they're like, it's too dangerous. You
Yeah.
know, we can't. And I think that that should happen more often. But yeah, like that's the thing. Like I don't know. I just the status quo. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend like I have all of the answers. I do have some ideas, and we've talked about them before on different episodes. Go look at our go listen to our episodes on Ice Cube's contract with Black America. You'll hear a lot of my ideas. But like the status quo is not sustainable. We keep dying, you know,
Yes.
and it's not okay. We have to continue to speak up. We can't continue to accept the status quo.
Yes. I saw an interesting meme the other day, which I thought about sharing, but it was like the meme was like, as a for a barber, you have to have 15 hours worth of training. For a police, you only have to have like 800 hours. And like, which is crazy that you have actually have to have more. I mean, there's you have to have more training for many positions than to have a gun and supposedly protect our society. But you're not protecting our society if you are frightened all the time and you think everyone is trying to kill you, and that no matter what the circumstances, you have to draw a weapon, whether it's a taser or a gun or your nightstick. Or I guess maybe are we going to talk about the Derek Chauvin trial a little bit?
I think I have to save that for a different day.
Okay, all right. It's too hard. Yeah.
It is like it is really hard. Like I spent a lot of time this week actively avoiding the news because
Yeah.
I
That's.
knew, you know, the things that were going on. And I was like, I can't listen to these, you know, I can't pay attention to them. So also understand, you know, if you have people of color in your life and they're engaging or disengaging or they're behaving differently, they're probably trying to find ways to cope and process right now. So be compassionate and be gentle.
Yes,
And
because
yeah,
it's rough.
it's
I mean,
difficult,
it's
right?
very difficult for our to have to process all this stuff and still function in the world.
Right.
And we're not in the United States. We're Imagine what it's like if you're living in the United States at this time, how you feel, how people feel, how they're scared for their families, how they know, especially people that are protesting these things, how they know they have to protest. But I'm sure it's very scary. Very, very scary. I can't even imagine it. I mean, like I said, I've been having trouble all week processing all these things, you know, and I haven't watched the trial. I haven't really read about it, but there is this show that I listen to that they have, there's a person who's have a person there reporting on it, so they report the details, and somehow it's a little more palatable, like coming
Yeah,
from a, like just
I'll have
because
to listen to
Yeah,
that.
because it's just a little like it, you know, it's like a 5 minute segment, and it's somehow, you know, it's like she doesn't, it's also a woman doing it, and so she's a little bit more sensitive about the details. But yeah, I can't handle it. I mean, I can handle just listening, just so I know a little bit going on, but honestly, I don't feel positive about this trial.
I mean, I remember when it started about a week and a half ago or so, and I tried listening to the actual trial, and I was like, I can't do this. I think I listened to about an hour. And I was like, I can't sit here and listen to this guy, the defense attorney. Everyone's entitled to a defense. Everyone's entitled to a defense. That's how a good justice system has to work. I don't have to listen to
Yes.
it.
Oh, 100%. No, no.
I'm not a judge. I'm not a lawyer. Like,
Nope,
I don't
not
have to
in the
listen to it.
jury. I don't you don't
Right.
have to be a part of it. No, because it's not going to be good,
Right.
but yes.
And I heard some talk, because they wrapped up the trial, or at least I think the defense rested their case yesterday.
That's right.
So the defense, they've said what they feel like they needed to say, and I think now it'll go to the prosecution to make any last statements, and then I think they'll deliberate the jury. And I heard, or I didn't hear, but I read, people saying like, oh, the defense did a horrible job of representing him. Surely we'll get a guilty verdict. I'm like, I don't know. Like, history
Yeah,
tells us
well,
different.
that's yeah, that's that that doesn't make me mean anything. And you know, I heard something from these the insurrection trials, or you know, arrest. One of the lawyers was asked a question about somebody. He was a defense attorney, and he's like, I'm not a magician. You know, like I can only there's only so much I can do. And that's the thing about being a defense attorney. If people are really doing terrible things, like there's only so much you can say, you know? Like you can only especially if it's caught on camera. There's not so much you can say, but we'll see how that is. So, yeah, I think we should yeah, we're coming to the end of our time, and all I can tell you is you and everybody else listening to this, you know, take some time for yourself if this stuff is getting you down. And just, you know, you don't have to watch the news. You don't have to read articles. You don't have to comment on people's posts. You know, you know, just, I won't say ignore it, but just back away from it. Like, there are people that are paid to handle this. Like, you don't have to litigate it yourself.
You don't have to engage yourself. Just, take time, be nice to yourself, be compassionate to yourself, and take care of yourself, and be compassionate to those around you as well.
Yeah.
And that's we will see what justice we will see whether we get justice for George Floyd, and we'll see what developments happen over the next few weeks, for Duante Wright and for Adam Toledo.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
hoping for
Hopefully.
the best, and
Yeah. And then, you know, I mean, We can hope for the best, but what's really going to change things is if we demand that policing in America is, changed. It's that we have to change it, that police need a lot more training, a lot more training. That police maybe don't need to be armed like they're in the military. And that qualified immunity, that's got to go. You know, there's no other job where you can kill people, even in the army. You cannot just randomly kill people. Like, there's no other job where you can kill people, and there are people who are like, yeah, okay, that's the way it is, you know, so what? Yeah, there's, I mean, really, there's a lot of things, a lot of changes that need to happen. And if we can just make a few and then make a few more, like, it's not going to happen overnight. We're going to have to do this as a process. But it can be done. We just have to all, or most of us, have to agree that just the police randomly killing people
It's not
because of
okay.
what is not okay. Like, it's just not okay. And we know that they can not kill people because when a white person has
Oh, yeah.
yeah, they manage to not kill them when they've
This
done
guy.
mass killing.
Every like all these white mass shooters, and also just this past week too, the white man, the old 60 something year old guy who, rammed two police cars and then drove off with a police officer hanging out off of his window, because they were trying to get him, the guy, the police officer, I think, tried to reach in to turn the key to turn the vehicle off.
Wow.
But somehow the 60-something-year-old white man survived his encounter with the police. Duante Wright just tried to get back into the car to call his aunt, and he got killed.
You see, that's and so we know it can be done. It's just we have to make sure that this privilege to live through a police encounter is no longer a privilege. It is a right for every
Afforded to
citizen.
all,
Yes.
exactly. Exactly.
Well, all right. Well, Ben, it's always great to talk with you. And I'm sh yeah, you are our best and brightest.
Thank you. Thank you,
So.
thank you. Yeah, so we'll talk next week, I think. Hopefully, as long as nothing else horrible happens, but I think next week we'll talk about misogyny and homophobia in the Black communities. And
Yeah,
so we'll
I'm looking forward to
Yeah,
that.
I think it's time to have this
Yeah,
conversation.
I have a lot to say about that, ironically. About misogyny noir. Yeah. Anyway, everybody take care, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.